All right, welcome to the Inspiring Possibilities podcast. I have my sister from another mother and father, Darylise Lyons. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Julian. It's great to talk to you again and great to be here with your listeners.
Awesome. So if you guys recognize the voice, it's because Darylise was on another episode. So Darylise is the author of many. But one of my favorite is probably one that is, I don't know if it is necessarily as popular as others, but it is a kid's book called I'm Mixed. And it's one that inspired me to write my own book that is not out yet. The people don't know yet. So ta-da! And it's about my journey from Africa to Europe as a kid, because mixed kid and biracial kids have a little bit of a different experience when it comes to just, you know, becoming adults, right? Different things that you have to work through. And Darylise has done an amazing job in her life talking about it, exploring it, opening doors that others didn't know, you know, existed. So Darylise, for those that, you know, I gave a little summary, but for those that don't know you, tell a little bit something about you.
Yeah, sure. So, and thank you. I didn't realize that my book inspired you in that way. That's really flattering and hopeful. And I can't wait to read what you've written. So yeah, I think I'm a storyteller. I've always been a storyteller. I love telling stories in a variety of different forms, whether it be writing or podcasting. And I'm biracial. I am always willing to push the envelope in terms of cultural conversations. and I've always been that way. I think I just kind of came out this creative and innovative and dynamic thinker, and it's served me well and gotten me in a lot of trouble over my life.
It was funny. I feel like the next question, you know, it's funny whenever you talk to somebody that asks question for a living, like Darylise, yeah. It's like you're thinking about the question that you're asking, so you're not just asking like, dang it, she's gonna think about my question now. I have a better question you could have asked, but I'm gonna go with the one you said, Julian. So my question is, what trouble? I want to know.
Oh my gosh. Well, so when I was a little kid, I think, you know, one of the first stories that my mom will tell is about the time I got sent to the principal's office for misbehaving. And I got there and the principal was right next to the nurse. And I just like made something up about how I had a stomach ache. And I went and saw the nurse instead of the principal. And I feel like, you know, I mean, I've been telling stories my whole life with various success. I also, you know, in my professional career, I'm willing to have conversations about things that people don't always want to talk about, like race and identity and sexuality. And, you know, so I feel like I've kind of made it my job to be willing to have these kind of uncomfortable conversations. And I don't know if that is so much trouble as it's just pushing the envelope and shaking the Etch-a-Sketch, I think. And people, my experience is that people are a little sometimes put off by that, but also really desperate for it and really want to be having these conversations.
No, I agree with you. I think this is being able to go to that collision of asking those questions, you know, to people, because everybody doesn't, they don't really want to speak the truth, you know, what the truth is. Instead of my coaching, you know, coaching men, that is like one of the hardest things to do, is just being able to go into, you know, the conversation and asking the tough question, you know, and keep on digging and staying inside of maybe pain to figure out, to understand the landscape better.
Yeah.
So you don't make assumptions. And I know you're big inside of that space of like, I'm not trying to make assumptions. I'm trying to actually have data and facts to be able to actually, you know, to actually come up with, you know, with my stories.
Well, and it's interesting because I love data and I love facts and I love statistics, and they don't change people. I think stories change people. And so, yeah, I mean, to your point, Julian, like I want to dig deeper and I want to get to the story. And I think that it's when people start to look at their narratives and to interrogate them and to be willing to kind of revise their own history or their own interpretation of events that things really do and can change. But yeah, I wish that facts changed people, but I don't know that they do always.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. I think always, they don't always. And sometimes the facts are established inside of your truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But your truth is sometimes not the truth.
Yes.
Your truth.
Right.
And sometimes your truth is your truth in this season.
Mm-hmm.
Mean that your truth does not change once you know better, right? It's the whole, you know, one of the whole movement before, you know, that happened a couple years ago was like, when you know better, you do better.
Mm.
That whole thing, people are like, I didn't know it was like that. You know, especially when we talk about, you know, diversity, equity, inequity, you know, and inclusion, like that whole space.
Yes.
Like people are like, I didn't know it was that bad. Do you know? I just didn't know. And you're like, really? Like it's been.
Yeah, right.
You know? And so the whole thing about when you know better, you do better. And sometimes the facts, when done correctly, the facts don't lie, but the facts can be massaged.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. I love inside of, I can't remember if it was in one of your books, you had this thing, and I keep on bringing this up every time I have a conversation, especially when it comes to the U.S. and we talk about percentage of your percentage of African-American, like what percent you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how like they went all the way to like an eighth. Right, it's like an eighth, a quarter, half full, right? But it was like the only one that actually gave you this thing because we're trying to figure out like what percentage of it you are. And that's facts, like that's legit facts. You know, I think you even had like a, I don't know if it's a screenshot.
Oh yeah,
like that picture of like, hey, here's what the census, whatever it was asked. You know,
right. And I mean, the one drop rule is so kind of subjective and arbitrary, and it's something that dates back to, I think a lot of people say it dates back to slavery, but it really dates back to segregation, I think, because it was a way of enforcing separation between the races. And one of my like my amazing assistant found a copy of the census, and I think it was on the screen when I did a TED talk called Black or White, Refusing to Choose and Embracing Both Sides of My Biracial Identity. And so I think that's what you're remembering. And yeah, that struck me too. And you know, something else that I didn't realize until I started digging into the subject of race and racial identity in the United States is you know, census takers used to be the one to determine people's race. So they wouldn't ask people like, oh, hey, like, what are you or what's your background or where do you come from or where are your parents from? It would really be based on what the person thought the other person looked like. And so that's a wild ride, right?
I don't know this guy.
right. Yeah. And I mean, it's so objective, like what people are subjective rather, like what people look like doesn't always match their racial identity, their backgrounds, their history, their, you know, place of origin. So there's a lot of misidentification that was happening, a lot of paper genocides that happened, you know, as a result of kind of what you were talking about earlier, like people telling our truths for like, you know, rather than kind of inviting people to tell their truths or acknowledge their facts, right? This like projection onto people.
What is paper suicide? You know, I'm gonna ask a lot of questions.
Well, great question. So it's paper genocide is like I mean, I think it could be like it could be people perhaps like writing themselves out of things, but paper genocide is you know, it's this movement basically to eradicate certain underrepresented identities. So like, you know, indigenous people, they would be, their races a lot of times on the census would be marked as white, right? So that they kind of, those indigenous roots would be wiped away, right? Like paper genocide, it's sort of, you know, I guess the reference is killing people, eradicating people, getting rid of people on paper, right? Kind of eliminating those identities. And there's a lot of ways, if you trace back into the United States history, Canadian history as well, there's like just been a lot of examples of attempts to primarily remove indigenous people, but also, you know, and other people of underrepresented identities. Yeah.
Well, thank you for giving me for explaining that. You know, one I recently had to redo my driver's license.
Mm.
And so I'm in Texas. And so, and I couldn't remember last time, you know, I did it exactly how it worked, but I remember this one time I've always used to select other or two or more, right? Like that's always been my go-to, like other, or if it's like, you have to write, I'm right. Like, you know what it is, but this time, and this was 2023. Yes. 2023. This time it was like, no, you need to pick one.
Mm.
Right.
It said that on the form.
You need to pick one. And I was just like, and I'm like, and I'm here and I'm arguing, right? Arguing with debating. I'm debating. Yeah. Like all the people there, like they're just like, hey, you ready? I'm like, no, because I have to select one, but I'm not one.
Yeah.
I'm black and I'm white. Like, well, you can't. I'm like, well, that's who I am. I'm not black and I'm not white. I'm both. Yeah. And I'm debating that is like more than one person that I'm actually debating with. Wow. Right. And I'm asking, like, which one should I, you know, I'm like, okay, so what would you pick? Right. And it becomes very interesting, like the conversations, you know, the conversation with people, you know, and but eventually I had to pick. So in another episode, I will tell you guys what I picked.
Yeah, I want to know. I want to. Can you tell me after we stop recording? You can leave the cliffhanger, but I want to know.
Cliffhanger for the next episode. But it was very interesting to me to see that it was like still pushed to like pick one where nobody is really one anymore and understand some of the rules that were there before. But anyway, so that was interesting. So Darylise,
yes,
we're here today to talk about the podcast that's coming out, right? I think, is this one where my kids were in or?
Yeah, so the one that your kids were in, we did 3 episodes of the On Being Biracial podcast. We did Youth Voices. You can go and hear Julian's adorable children. We had four technically, but one of them was, we have their voices on the episodes that came out in 2022. We did a Youth Voices series and now we, launched a series on adults. So we've got 30 voices of people, a lot of people from Philadelphia, a lot of people from around the world. One of the voices that you might recognize is a renowned comedian and documentary filmmaker, W. Kamau Bell. We've got, you know, it's been really exciting and a lot of different perspectives on people's racial identities and experiences and stories like the one you just told, Julian, like going into the DMV and trying to figure out what to pick and wanting to be able to pick both. And yet, being told no, and stories of, you know, and it's, even though it's called the On Being Biracial podcast, we interviewed people with a multiracial background, however they identify. So we have some people there with a history of identifying as white. We have people there who identify as Black or Latinx or Filipinx or, you know, or multiracial or biracial or mixed or multicultural. So it's really, you know, I think, without giving away too much, like we didn't try to take a perspective on how people need to identify. It's really about allowing that person to tell their own story and own their own truth.
Okay. So let's talk. See me. You guys didn't see me, but I just laid back.
Yeah.
It's my laid back brain here somewhere. So because that's a topic that I like to debate to some extent.
Mm.
What you're identifying as,
yeah,
right? Because a lot of people get triggered by it, right? By, for example, you're biracial, but you only identify as like Black because you're, yeah, the white side of your family never did anything for you, positive. Mm-hmm. Or the opposite, you identify as white because, yeah, the Black side of your family is the one that left you or whatever, never, right, were present, right? And so you're identifying as one or the other where you're both.
Mm.
But you're doing it based of perhaps how you feel or a decision that you're making, right? So talk to me about the reason behind doing it, you know, doing that podcast and, you know, with just without going necessarily one lane, it's just like opening it up to everybody to say, hey, this is who I identify as.
Yeah. So I'm biracial and have firmly always identified as Black and white. Like, and also I want to say that my life experiences have been very reflective of that. Like I grew up surrounded by Black people, white people, biracial people, had a lot of love in my life coming from all sides. I, not that there is a way to look biracial, but people often, when they guess what I am, they guess black and white. You know, I kind of look like I look like my ancestry, right? But there's a lot of people who that's not the case for. And we spoke to some people who, you know, maybe they grew up and they feel like their experiences have been the experiences of a black person, right? Like that's what they've lived. They've, you know, that's how the conversations that they've had, the ways that they were treated, perhaps the family relationships that they've had, like have really mirrored the life experiences of someone who is monoracial and black, right? Or someone grew up, let's say, feeling really ostracized by one side of their family. And so, you know, I guess I hear what you're saying about like, yeah, but you're both, you know, you're both, you come from both. Why not acknowledge both? But I don't think everyone's life experiences are always accurately represented if they say, yeah, I'm mixed, I'm biracial, but they grew up in an all-white family, an all-white household. Maybe they didn't even know they were biracial until they took an ancestry DNA test. You know, some people that we interviewed were adopted. Some people, you know, they grew up in neighborhoods where if they said they were mixed or they were biracial, they got beat up because those neighborhoods, like, you know, were not hospitable to whiteness and felt like, so, you know, I mean, I was born in 1983 and in a time when I think it was acceptable to own my mixed identity to a certain extent, but, you know, a couple decades before me, there was the Loving versus Virginia. And I might be wrong with the timing, but like interracial marriage was illegal for a long period of time in this history and in our history. And some of the people we interviewed remembered that, right? Or had parents who were threatened or in some way, like for being in an interracial relationship, or it was illegal that them being together. So yeah, I think my perspective is that I'm both, but not everyone kind of grew up able to own that or wanting to own that, or that didn't reflect their life experiences. So I feel like my big takeaway from the podcast is just that I don't know anyone else's story, but I can listen and I can hopefully understand a little bit and create more space for other people to tell their own story and have their own experience and feel met authentically wherever they are and, you know, whoever they are.
And so how, what is the outcome? What is the outcome that you're hoping to achieve inside of creating this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we did 10 episodes, a 10 episode season. And I always feel like the quality of our life is determined by the quality of our questions. I mean, I know that might be a corny thing, but it's one that I come back to a lot. And so I don't, you know, if people are listening, hoping that they're going to find like one answer for what it means to be a multiracial person in the US, they're going to be disappointed, but I still hope they'll listen. Because, you know, we explored a lot of things, people's experiences of work and school and being asked the what are you question and people's family relationships and what it was like dating as a multiracial, multiethnic person. And, you know, we tell some really beautiful and uplifting stories, some really charged and painful stories and abusive experiences. And so, like, what I'm hoping is that, I guess, if someone themselves is multiracial or biracial or comes from a mixed race background, I hope that they hear their experiences mirrored and they feel seen and understood and they feel like their story is being told in a nuanced and responsible way. And I think if someone's not multiracial, my hope is that they, in listening to the podcast, can sort of get a little bit of understanding for the breadth of experiences that the multiracial people in their life and in their communities have had. So I think it's a little different depending on who's listening, but I would hope that any listener could get a lot out of it.
That's awesome. And one of the things that I wrote down, with which I think is probably, and I know you went very fast on it, you didn't want to camp on it, but to me, it's one that I've experienced more and more, you know, inside of obviously, you know, being a leader in my community and such, is the quality of your question.
Yeah.
Right. Is going to determine the quality of your life.
Yeah.
Because you can see it now inside of the limitation of AI, for example. It's only limited to the quality of the quality and the refinement of the question that you're asking, aka the prompts.
Yes.
You and I can go the same topic, but you have a very specific set of questions, and the way you're refining them, you get a very different set of answers than somebody else does. But the game of asking the right question enough time to actually get to the outcome,
mm-hmm.
or just the door, or right. the doors, right? Because sometimes it's not about an outcome. It's just like, hey, I just want to bring you inside of like this circle, and this circle has multiple doors. And now it's like your choice to decide which door you want to get into. My only job is to guide you to this mm-hmm. circle that has multiple doors. And now you can decide which door is actually empowering you right now, right? Yeah. Because the different questions are going to create different stories, right? Very different storyline.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's, to me, that's the number one thing that I got out of it. Like I said, you went kind of like
I did. I glossed right over that
one. Yeah, it was like, it's a huge one, because people can experience that more and more, right? And inside of vocabulary and inside of like question asking, there's also perspective. Mm-hmm. There's also just a different life, right? Those that have a better vocabulary can actually express how they feel better than somebody that says like, I'm angry, I'm mad, I'm happy. I have three sets of emotions or feelings that I can actually share with you. It's like, you're actually not angry, you're irritated.
Right.
Or you're actually not irritated, you're just annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I say I'm annoyed, it's very different if I say I'm angry. If I'm angry, I have to act angry. Even if I'm just annoyed. Do you know what I mean? And so that's, to me, where I got out of what you said there. It's just like, that is a huge one, a huge topic that I think listeners can definitely relate to, you know, without passing through it.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you slowed it down. I think because I've gotten very used to interviewing other people, I always want to get the focus off of me and to someone else. But like right now, I want to be asking you a lot of questions. But I will say that I had the honor and the privilege of collaborating on this project with another biracial journalist, Malcolm Burnley. And then we also have an editorial producer, Emily Previty, and being able to, the three of us kind of put our heads together, ask questions. I did a number of the interviews. Malcolm did a number of the interviews. I felt like, you know, the collaborative asking of questions was so much richer than if I had just been the only person asking questions. And so, yeah, to your point, Julian, I think the quality of our questions is determined by the quality of our lives. And we don't always know I don't always know what questions to ask, right? Like myself or others. And I think that's the value of things like coaching and therapy, is being able to kind of have someone else come at something from a different perspective and maybe ask a question that, you know, like, I don't know, we wouldn't naturally think about.
It goes to kind of that thing of like, there's things that I know, things that I know I don't know, which I get a coach for, because I'm like, I have this gap.
Yeah.
Right. And I think instead of like your work, instead of the diversity and inclusion space, is like, hey, I'm trying to make you, I'm trying to open doors that you don't even know, that you don't know. Right. You come to like, hey, we don't really know how to serve people inside of this space, how to make them feel part of, how to give them space and stuff. And then instead of the teaching or the coaching, now we're getting to the space of like, wow, there's things I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now that creates a new set of questions. And some people feel uncomfortable in that space. They're like, I want to escape. So awesome. So,
well, before your next question, one of the values I think of podcasting is that people can come to a space where they find out things they either know they don't know, or they don't know that they don't know them, in a safe and supportive and personal environment where there's no threat and there's no risk. I think sometimes it can be really scary to walk into a room with a group of people and be like, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know what to say to these people, or to enter into a new relationship with someone with an identity that maybe you're not familiar with and be like, oh, I don't want to get it wrong. I don't know what to do. And I think one of the things that I love about podcasts is that it allows people to educate themselves at their own pace, in their own environment, you know, and to kind of begin that process, and then they can embark on, you know, kind of interpersonal practice and relationships, which are so meaningful. But I, you know, we did a whole episode on the "What are you?" question, and like, kind of just looking at that for someone who maybe doesn't know that some people might be rubbed the wrong way by that "What are you?" question. Like, I think that it's helpful to have the podcast as a resource for people to kind of learn a little bit about what they might not know in a way that, you know, doesn't offend anyone or hurt anyone or put the burden of education on a person who's already holding a marginalized identity.
100%. So, you know, I've talked about that a lot instead of my personal life, right? Which is as a little kid, because I struggle inside of like this identity of like, hey, Black people tell me I'm white people tell me I'm Black, and I don't want to be in the middle. I want to be one or I want to be the other, right? But my mom really encouraged me to say, like, no, you mix, right?
Oh, yeah.
But that created this space of like feeling less than because you're not any one of them. You are a mixture of, right? Yeah. And inside of now, different, but before, that created a sense of insecurity, inferiority, which gets compensated by ego, by competition, by like, I'm gonna show them that I'm superior. I'm going to do everything that I can to outwork, outperform, do better, look better.
Yeah.
Just the sense of, you know, security. And eventually got to the place of, you know, I remember a coach, it was a Tony Robbins coach, and he asked me, like, he went so deep instead of the why? How? Why? And I got to that realization of like, oh my gosh, yes, most of my life I felt inferior. And most of the decision that I made was to combat
this
feeling of inferiority that stems from like an identity, right? Yeah. Like not knowing who you are. And eventually got to a place of understanding, like, I'm both, I'm Black and I'm white, I'm mixed, I'm a bridge. I can bridge both. I'm this and I'm that. Right. And so for those that, because I know that some people don't go as deep as I've gone inside of personal development and coaching and all that kind of stuff to go into the, you know, the darkness in the pit inside of me to get there, those are still stuck inside of that identity, whether it's like my mom is Chinese and my dad is, you know, is Indian. Like those are very strong, you know, culture collide. Yeah. And now you're there and you have to, you're not this or you're not that. You're just, you're a mixture. And they're struggling with that piece as an adult, not as a kid, but as an adult.
Yes.
How can they navigate, you know, that that conflict inside of their own self, inside of identity?
Yeah, it's an important conflict that you bring up, because I think that, you know, a lot of, and this is kind of what we found in the research that we did and also in interviewing people, is like the quest for belonging is something that I think can be challenging for multiracial people, because it's like, well, okay, so maybe I belong here. I belong in this Asian group, or I belong in this Indian group, but like I have to check parts of myself at the door, or I belong, but it's only partial belonging. People don't always get my references. They don't always kind of know where I'm coming from, or I feel like I'm not Asian enough, or I'm not Indian enough, or I'm not Black enough, I'm not this enough. And I think that acknowledgement is really important. And that's what you talked about in your own journey, like first just becoming aware of that feeling of inadequacy, that feeling of maybe being an outsider and not being good enough, not measuring up. And then I think representation is really helpful. I mean, one of the reasons we wanted to do this podcast is to bring stories forward of people who have these similar parallel experiences of like, you know, maybe some people felt special or some people felt inferior or whatever, but most of us felt like our stories weren't quite, like didn't quite fit within a certain racial group or community. I think affinity spaces are really helpful for people, like kind of joining groups where they do feel a sense of belonging, creating relationships where they do feel like they can be all of themselves.
You had that growing up, right?
I did. I absolutely did. But, you know, I don't think it's like a easy fix. I mean, the fact that you were that you shared, Julian, that like you had to go really deep and dig into that. And I mean, I don't know, but I know for myself, the areas where I'm wounded, even if I've dealt with them and got dug deep or whatever, if I have a instant today that kind of triggers some old thing, like I might still go to that space. So I guess what I would say is for people who feel that way, like they're not enough or like outsiders or anything, I would just encourage them to acknowledge that, to find someone that they can talk to about it, to find spaces where they can be safe to be all of themselves, to look for stories that remind them of their story. And yeah, to do the work, but to recognize that it might take a long time. It might not be that they read one book and suddenly they're, you know, like that feeling evaporates, because it's probably, especially as an adult, like it's probably decades of those experiences, decades of those interpretations, decades of the story being that if someone doesn't want to play with you, it's like, oh, it's because of my race or it's because of this. And it may or may not be, but like that's the lens, the framework, the storytelling. So I guess I would just kind of let people know that I think it's going to be a long journey, but it's an important journey and it's worthwhile to take it.
Yes. A new mentor of mine, Garen Jones, he talked heavily kind of like about that thing, right? Which is like that adults are just deteriorated kids, right? Because you're younger and then you never fully get out of it.
Yeah.
Right. And that creates this sense of like you're not your full expressed self, which I love to use because it feels better to say like full expression versus like your authentic self per se.
Yes.
Like whoever you are, like, you know what I mean? Like you can be this, but you actually, this is your expression of who deep inside you actually are and not what the exterior looks like. And your community can look very different.
Mm.
You know, like it's just about who is accepting me for who I am right now and how I'm actually, you know, expressing it to the world. Both of us being creators, it's like we create, we get stuff, release it, you know, into the world. And that makes you feel part of when you're next to other creators.
Yes.
Your energy matches, you know, their energy.
And acceptance, I mean, I don't think acceptance means that people co-sign on everything that I want to do or everything that I think or everything that I say. I mean, some of the people who accept me the most in my life are the people who challenge me the most, who push me, who will call me on my BS. Like, so I think I love that full expression because I do think it's a push and pull, right? It's like, how am I going to show up with people and in relationships where I have unconditional love and support and I'm valued as the fullness of who I am. And also people kick me in the butt sometimes and are like, you know, yeah, you need to do this creative project. Or I know you're afraid of this, but show up anyway and do the thing anyway. So I think it's, you know, acceptance is not complacency, right? I think there's, for me anyways, the people that love me the most want me to be my fullest self and will push me when I'm not being my fullest self.
I'm writing it down because I want to kind of transition from there, which is what you said. Acceptance is not complacency.
Yeah.
Right? Because I accept who I am, that does not mean that I'm settling.
Right.
Because to accept something is there's work involved inside of like accepting a situation, right? When I talk about me and like this whole thing of like feeling fear when I was younger, where that developed this piece of me being an achiever.
Yes. Right?
So it's like the great thing about achievers is that they achieve. The challenging thing about achievers is like values inside of achievement.
Right.
So if you're in a place of non-achievement, then you're in a place of like, I'm not valued or valuable.
Yeah.
Into this space, into this ecosystem, I'm only valuable when I'm actually producing. I'm only valuable if I actually create stuff. I'm only valuable if I actually release what I've created. And all that stem again, you go back to the space, right? Stem from the fact it's like, hey, you want to be better.
Yeah.
You know, and to this new thing, which is, I just want to be able to be all that I can be. So I don't want to make excuses behind it. I'm still going to achieve, but I'm going to have a very healthy level of achievement to failure and being okay with the experience of learning behind it versus I'm afraid to make this movement because I might fail. And therefore, it's the opposite of achievement.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Like failing is opposite of achievement, and therefore I'm like, oh no, you know, I'm off balance.
You know, I've started to really fall in love with failing. I fail all the time, but the question I ask myself is, am I failing forward? You know, like, is there progress in this failure? And I think my life has gotten better, more expansive, more, I've actually achieved more as I've become more willing to fail, you know, because I think it's almost like people who procrastinate a lot, right, tend to be very perfectionistic. And if they'll just say, okay, well, I'm, you know, 80% is good enough, right, then they can motivate to do more. And I think for me too, I have all my life defined myself based on my achievements, based on, you know, am I worthy? Like, how do I earn my value? And I think the more that I allow myself to just have value, intrinsic value as a human being, and just do what I'm motivated to do and work hard, yeah, but not make work my whole life. Like, I don't know, it's gotten better, and I've been able to kind of do more and been able to collaborate and let go of control. And so I love what you're, I just relate a lot to that, you know, kind of defining yourself based on achievement and having all your value wrapped up in that, and some of the, you know, the downsides of that. That can be really painful and hard for both, been hard and painful for me, but also the people around me who are like, can you just slow down? And like, can we just go to lunch? Like, why do you have to do all the things, you know, let's just hang out for a while or whatnot.
Why do we have to be so just like always thinking of the next project?
Yes. Yeah. Right.
For I love it. I think there's definitely, more conversation, you know, inside of it. And as you said, kind of like this thing of creating a space, you know, for, because like I say, you had that growing up, if I remember correctly, it's like when you were little, it's just like your parent kind of had this group of other parents with mixed kids, and it was just like, hey, mixed kid together, because your experience at school is different than other people, right? Like my kids, you know, I have six kids, they're obviously mixed because Mallory and I are white, I'm mixed, and so we created just kids that some are look more like me and some look more like her and some are kind of, and people don't fully know. But what are you?
Right.
Oh, is the question. And how do they identify? Even instead of them, the six of them, the people, those that look darker, they're like, well, you black. And it's like, well, you white. You know what I mean? And it's just
how
to identify creates a space, you know, between the two. And you kind of want to be, and that's why I love your book, like I Mixed, because you're like, hey, I love, if I say that I'm white, then, you know, I won't love the nose that I have that comes from my dad. If I say that I'm this, that I won't be loving the side of my mom.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you have both of them colliding together and create this mixture.
Yeah.
That is you, that is beautiful, you know, and not the other story that is comparing yourself to, for example, like an animal, because there's a clear value there. If you're 100% this breed,
right.
Higher than if you're just like you're a pit bull in a lab.
Well, you know what's interesting though, because I mean, whether it be humans or animals or whatever, like there's been a lot of research about how health outcomes are less positive for people who, or, you know, animals or whatever, who are less diverse, like because there's, you know, you tend to have more genetic predisposition to issues or whatever. And I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that multiracial people are better or worse or different. It's just that, you know, sometimes the logic that people use of like, oh, well, this is better than that. It's like, well, why? You know, and there's actually nothing to back that up, whether it be research or lived experience, you know, and I don't think any identity is inherently good or bad. It's just like how we move through the world and how we experience life as a person who holds that identity. And even, you know, when you were talking about your kids, I was so struck when I had the opportunity to speak with them, Julian. You know, some of your kids have had a lot of racialized experiences and thought deeply about it. And some of them are like, no, like that's just not, that just hasn't been part of my world. And I think, you know, there's a lot of diversity within an experience, within a household, within like, so, yeah, I think it's just important to kind of let people be who they are and to meet them as they are.
That is awesome. So segueing, and I know we're getting towards the end of our time together, but looking at kind of like what you said, right? Which is, I'm here and I'm raising kids.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be able to have this experience that is, hey, you're not what your color or mm-hmm. what you look like is. But at the same time, and this is, again, I'm going to use the US, right, as an example. I have to explain to you how there's a higher chance that you're going to be treated this way
mm-hmm.
if you look like this right now.
Yeah.
So, like, help me navigate that. Like, how do you navigate that inside of? And I know it's a very kind of weird path, right?
Or yeah. challenging,
but how do you navigate that?
Yeah. So there's a lot of research that shows that people who have more racial conversations and racial preparation tend to have better self-esteem and more positive outcomes. I think parents think that they're doing a good job by just denying race and denying color and denying all of these things. Like, oh, well, if I don't expose my child to this thing, then they're going to be innocent for forever. But the truth is like kids talk about these things on the playground. They say things to each other and whatever. And if you don't make your child feel like they can have those conversations with you, then they're going to have to interpret things that happen with or without you, right? Whether it be their direct experiences or things that they see. So I think it's good to have like age appropriate conversations, right? You might not want to sit your 3-year-old down and talk about police brutality in America, you know, but can you talk about, hey, look at all the different skin colors in our family and look at, you know, and unfortunately in the United States, some people are treated differently based on their colors, but all people are beautiful and wonderful, you know? So I think just kind of having those conversations, and it's also not a one and done, like it's an ongoing adventure, you know, reading your kids' books about race and skin color and but also about other identities, you know, like if children who learn about, you know, LGBTQ families tend to be more open to, you know, talking about different racial differences, like kids who grow up thinking that there's a lot of different ways to be in the world, I think tend to have a more expansive viewpoint about like who they are and how they can be and creating space for others to be who they are too. So yeah, I think just having multiple conversations is great.
Well, thank you so much. So as we're, you know, we're saying goodbye, give us kind of one party piece of guidance and where can they go to, you know, to listen to the podcast?
Yeah. So the podcast On Being Biracial podcast drops. I'm not sure when this is coming out, but it drops on the 23rd of October, Monday, the 23rd of October. And then it'll be out twice a week from then on. So subscribe now everywhere you get your podcasts, or you can go to onbeingbiracialpodcast.com. And I guess like as a parting piece of wisdom or advice, I love what we were talking about earlier with the quality of our questions. And I guess I would invite people to ask themselves, there's a question that I saw once in a leadership development training that's like, what am I pretending not to know? So that's my favorite question to ask myself. What am I pretending not to know? But then also like, what parts of myself am I suppressing? And I think that's part of this conversation, right? What parts of myself am I not exploring? Am I suppressing? Am I shutting down? And I would invite people to kind of start thinking about that and see if they can let those parts out safely and authentically so they can be the fullest expression of themselves.
Well, Darylise, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I know that, you know, we'll most likely talk again.
Yes.
Maybe about, you know, who knows, maybe like an online summit to give a space and a place for people to learn more about, you know, kind of just mixed heritage and, you know, and all that beautiful space. So thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. It was really great to be with you and be with your listeners. Thanks.